Welcome to the Marketing Minds Podcast, the resource for entrepreneurs and executives who want to enjoy higher returns on their marketing investments. And now, here's your host, Tom Trush.
So when was the last time you contacted your inactive clients? Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the Marketing Minds Podcast. Today, my guest is Charlie Gaudette. And in addition to being a marketing consultant and business coach, speaker, author, all that kind of good stuff, Charlie is known for pushing entrepreneurs, me included, beyond what is considered ordinary to build great companies. And he's here today to discuss the easiest way to get your past customers and clients buying from you again. And I'm excited because this is such a overlooked topic, and you know, as we'll, I'm sure we'll get into, it's something that it's a quick way to bring in some profits, especially here at the end of the year. We're looking to apply some new strategies for 2014, so I think it's a great topic. And Charlie, good morning, and thank you for being here.
Hey, well, thank you for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, you know, we'll give a, you know, as we, before we started recording, I mentioned that, you know, last time we did this, we have, you know, I've done an interview with Charlie before. We kind of went long, almost 2 hours, so we're going to work on condensing this a bit this time around. But, you know, I think what, you know, maybe listeners might want to know is, you know, we're in contact at least every day, it seems like, whether it's through instant messaging, on the phone, through email, whatever it is. So it's not like I just picked a random guy out of that marketing universe and brought him in to talk about you know, client reactivation. I mean, Charlie and I go back a ways, and you know, this is kind of a little insight into the conversations that we have just about every day. So,
well, and actually, Tom, before we get into the meat of the topic, I believe it was a brain fart. Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, right?
Yeah.
And Napoleon Hill had he interviewed some of the wealthiest, brightest people on the planet to find out what it was that helped them become successful and take their businesses over to the next level. And one of the things that Napoleon Hill discovered was the power of a mastermind. And so part of the reason, just for listeners on the call, part of the reason why Tom and I engage in such regular conversation is quite frequently I'll bring something up to Tom, and it's like a tennis match. I'll serve the ball over to Tom. Tom will serve it back to me. He'll ask me a question. He'll challenge me, whatever it might be, but it'll stimulate a thought process or an idea that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So for those of you on the call, I know entrepreneurship can tend to be a little bit lonely. For a lot of us that are solopreneurs, we kind of sit in our office, and the communication that we have is somewhat limited beyond our clients and our customers. So reach out and find those people who you think are influencers, people who can you can play that tennis match with, and you'll find that 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, that 1 + 1 actually equals 3 and beyond.
Oh, yeah.
And just as in tennis, if you want to be good in tennis, you want to make sure that you're finding people that you can really go toe-to-toe with that's going to challenge you every time they serve the ball back. So.
Well, now, Charlie, so,
Want to share that with you.
You can't give that explanation, though, without giving the quote that you're known for, the together we're what?
Together we're better, buddy.
That's right. So we're going to talk about customer re-engagement, and we, you know, this had to be probably like a year, year and a half ago when you first brought up the idea about customer re-engagement and specifically creating a product, which I'm sure we'll get into, an info product about this and how to apply this strategy. And I remember back then, I mean, I was all fired up. I thought it was a great idea because it's something that I never really looked at for my business. So let's just start there and talk about, you know, what is a customer re-engagement strategy? And then also, of course, you know, why should we pay attention to what you're saying, huh?
Well, one of the interesting things about businesses is that most entrepreneurs and business owners, they're so focused on acquiring new customers, and this goes all across the board. It doesn't matter the size of the business. This happens with large businesses and small businesses alike. But they're so focused on acquiring new customers that they're letting the old ones slip through the cracks and walk out the back door. So trying to get people in the front door without realizing that people are slipping out through the back door. So that it's I often kind of equate this to relationships. And when you're going to court a new customer, when you want a new customer, that's when you throw down all the roses and you're really trying to make yourself attractive. You pull out the red carpet. You do whatever you can to win the hearts of the customer, but then once the customer walks in the door, you kind of ignore them and you just assume that now that they're a customer, they're going to continue to do business with you. Now, every business, regardless of how fantastic you are, you have some degree of attrition. Attrition is the customers that started doing business with you and then they stopped doing business with you. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is that while companies have attrition, the odds of getting a customer to come back and do business with you, getting those customers that stop, the odds of them getting them back in the buying cycle are about 80%, roughly, give or take. But the thing is if you don't reach out and reactivate those disengaged clients, you're going to lose them forever. See, one of the things that I have, whether they're Insiders Club members, they're coaching clients or whatnot, I've got people that come to me all the time that say, I really want you to help me grow my business and take my business to the next level. One of the first things that I do is I look at how can we reengage their inactive customers, because it is the fastest, easiest way to put an instant cash flow, cash surge into the business. When you think about it, a 2% increase in customer retention has the same effect as decreasing your costs by 10%. So if that's all it is a 2% increase in customer retention, so now you're losing less people, has the same effect as decreasing your costs by 10%, imagine what the impact is if you're increasing your retention by 5, 10, 15%, which is completely achievable. Now, the other thing worth mentioning is that a lot of people will say to me, why is there such a focus on working with your existing customers? Don't you just really want to bring in new people? I mean, why do you want to focus on the existing customers? There's a company called Marketing Metrics out there, and they did a study, and this actually is direct in line with my experience, that the probabilities of selling to an existing customer is 60 to 70% compared to only 5 to 50% with a new prospect. And I actually think that they were real generous when they even set it as low as 5% selling a new prospect, because we're seeing websites today, if you're online, when you're measuring conversion rates, I mean, they're at a fraction of 1%, a quarter of 1%, a 2% is considered good for a new customer. But your existing customers, getting them to buy 60 to 70% is definitely more realistic. Bain and Company, Bain, everybody is familiar with them, particularly with our buddy Mitt Romney, as his active role or in Bain and setting that up. They did a study that showed that acquiring a new customer costs 6 to 7 times more than an existing one. So if you think about that, why am I going to sit there when I'm working with a coaching client or whatnot, or and I stress on, let's go ahead and let's find you some new customers, when in fact I'd rather work inside of your existing database, because it's going to be the most profitable source of customers. They're more likely going to buy, 60 to 70% more likely to buy, and it's easier to sell them.
So if we narrow this down, I mean, really narrow it down to, you know, one specific issue here, is that so many business owners, entrepreneurs, executives, you know, once they make a sale, they're kind of thinking, well, game over, and assuming that that person is then, you know, may buy again, but they're kind of ignoring after the sale goes through. And so what you're saying here is that, you know, once that sale begins, it's the beginning. You have to continue to market to those people. But then also, if you haven't, there's incredible opportunity. I mean, is that, you know,
I'm going to think about this for a second, Tom. So right now in your business, you're looking to acquire new customers and clients, right?
Right. I think everybody
is. Do you care if they're currently working with other copywriters?
Or you
want their business anyway?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want their business.
So you want their business anyway. There's no difference between you and other companies out there. They don't care if these customers already have a previous relationship with somebody else. More than likely, they do. But what you're trying to do, am I correct in assuming what you're trying to do is position yourself as the best alternative?
Yeah, I think that's what everybody tries to do, you know.
You want to be the obvious choice. You want to be the best alternative. And there's a lot of positioning strategies and whatnot that you use to get yourself there. But right now, I mean, competition has changed form in the last 5 years, never mind the last 10, 15, 20 years, when competition way back in the day was, let's flip open the Yellow Pages and see who's got the biggest, most attractive ad. I mean, nowadays, it doesn't matter if you're a copywriter or if you're in dry cleaning or you got an internet business, whatever it might be, you have got more competition than ever before. You're not competing on a local level. You're competing on a national and even a global level. If you're a dry cleaner, a lot of dry cleaners will say, well, I mean, come on now. It's really just a local level. I mean, you're not going to take your laundry and drive your laundry over to the UK to get it dry cleaned. Come on now, Charlie. It's getting a little bit ridiculous. But it's not that ridiculous because technology has advanced to such a point that I can do my own dry cleaning at home if I want to.
Yeah.
And it's only going to – the technology for dry cleaning is only going to get that much better so that I might never have to leave the house and go get dry cleaning. And beyond just a local level, I mean, I have a company that is several towns away from me that does pickup and delivery of dry cleaning. So now I don't even have to go to my local dry cleaners anymore. They come to me.
Yeah.
And so as a company, so, you know, I work with my clients to position them as the obvious choice so that they win more market share and can dominate their marketplace. But what I need to do is make myself a more attractive option. See, the thing is, though, if you have clients, so you get a new customer, and they come in the door, and you did everything you can to woo them, and they left whoever they were to come in the door, but then you ignore them, the other competitor becomes much more attractive when they step up to the plate and they try to show all their different promises and why they should work with them, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's what you do. You wake up every morning, Tom, and anybody else listening to this call, you wake up every morning trying to ask yourself, what can I do to win more market share? What can I do to get more customers? Your competitors are trying to take the customers away from you, trying to take your existing customers away from you. Don't let that happen. You don't have to let that happen. Earlier in this call, Tom, you said together we're better.
Yep.
Really, that's the focus of your entire your business, your clients, your customers, your patients, whatever that might be. You need to look at them as, you know what? Together we are better. And it's my responsibility to serve you as much as possible, to provide you with a greater benefit, to provide you with a greater advantage, to get you that ultimate desire that you're after. And so just when they step in the door and they become a customer, your job isn't done. See, that's the way everybody else looks at it. They all look at it as, okay, I got a new customer, now my job is done. But that's why there's a subset of strategic entrepreneurs that are dominating their marketplace, even in today's economy, because they look at it as, okay, you just stepped through that door, you are now a customer, my job is just beginning totally different mindset. One mindset is this, the way everybody else sort of approaches it is, you step through the door, now I got your money, I can forget about you. The other subset are the strategic entrepreneurs, the people who say, okay, you walk through the door, you trusted me enough to invest in me, now I'm going to do whatever is possible to earn that trust, to further maintain and build that relationship with you, and do whatever I can to get you closest to the ultimate desire that you're after. These are the mindsets of the companies that have gone from starting in their garage to becoming billions. I mean, Apple Computer, I mean, Steve Jobs, it was his mindset of, I need to do whatever is possible to create the best customer experience. Richard Branson, the same thing. I mean, he's always coming up with new innovations and ideas. We're talking about billionaires here. This isn't something that's just kind of made up gobbledygook over here. This is off the page of the countless entrepreneurs, billionaire entrepreneurs, leaders who have turned around to take their companies and take charge of the market. You know, I guess if people understood what my background was and, you know, the amount of money that I've spent, you know, way over $500,000 and it's growing, traveling the world, studying billionaires, multimillionaires, celebrities, political leaders. I mean, we've heard about Nelson Mandela and the transformations that he had. I mean, I went so far as I went to South Africa, visited Nelson Mandela's prison, spent an hour with former President F.W. de Klerk just to get an understanding of who's this man, Nelson Mandela. I unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to meet Nelson himself, but I could meet the person who was knew Nelson very intimately. Now, what are some of their secrets? These are the people who are leading the world and making waves. So here's... this is why our last call went 2 hours, Tom. See, when you get me started, I can't shut up.
You get all fired up, that's for sure. So, well, let's get into this. I mean, obviously with some of the examples that you're giving, it sounds like, you know, like Apple, like Richard Branson, you know, they're really, when they get a customer, they're not giving that customer a chance to leave. And I don't say that in a bad way, but they're giving them opportunities to continue and reasons and value to keep those customers around. So I guess, you know, a quick question then is, you know, why are customers, I mean, why do they stop doing business with someone? I mean, is it as simple as that they're just not seeing the value, they just don't have the opportunity? What is it?
Well, the first and sort of that pink elephant in the room is you have to come to terms with the fact that you're not going to please everybody. And so the first reason is that, yes, there are going to be some customers that are dissatisfied, but the caveat in that is, yes, you're going to have customers that are dissatisfied, but most of the time, you have no idea whatsoever why a customer stopped doing business with you, and if they were dissatisfied, what the problem was. Because most of the time, the problem it happened inadvertently, it was poor communication, or maybe it was one bad employee. We had a woman that had been working with me as a vendor for quite a period of time, and she turned around. I asked her to reschedule the times that she was coming in, and she said, I can't reschedule. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I have rescheduled myself to accommodate you, but you're not rescheduling yourself to accommodate me. I just don't feel valued, so I terminated our relationship. And so she just said, okay, I didn't tell her why, because I like to study how other business owners and people would react. The onus is not on me to tell her why. I was done with the relationship because I wasn't happy. But when I told her, you know, I just think that at this point things aren't working out. It's not going in the direction that I'm happy with right now. So we're gonna split from here. She said, okay, no problem. You know, this was great. I'm just however it was translated back to her, she thought things were fantastic, and I left happy, and so there was no change, nothing out of her, which shocked me. And I turned around a week later and hired somebody else.
Wow.
So, but the thing is, and Michael Bash wrote this book. It's a fantastic, fantastic book. It's called Customer Culture. And I'm like 99% positive it was a story in this book where he talked about IBM. And there's been situations where IBM, they may have had a dissatisfied customer, but they immediately reached out to find out what is it that, where's the problem, and they bent over backwards to rectify the problem for the client. And when you have a dissatisfied customer, and the company steps up to the plate, and they do whatever they can to make it right, the loyalty and the amount of referrals increase over and beyond that of just a regular satisfied customer. So you're actually given an opportunity to not only correct the issue, but once you correct the issue, that particular client that you've corrected to becomes far more valuable than anybody else. It's a huge opportunity there.
Yeah, so those negative situations, I mean, we go into those fearing them and like, oh, what's this going to do? But if you, you know, tackle those things, you know, it's something, there's opportunity right there, you know, so. Gosh, you know what it makes me go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, what that makes me think of, you know, right now especially, it's become news, you know, with a lot of restaurants and stuff and Yelp. You know, Yelp, you know, how Yelp is killing some restaurants because of the negative reviews and stuff. And we've seen stories that have come out into the media where, you know, here locally especially there was one where, you know, they see these negative reviews and then their first reaction is to attack instead of to solve. And, you know, it just goes in, you know, you have a negative experience. It's that mindset from a business owner or entrepreneur perspective. How are you going to handle that, it sounds like? And, you know, boy, the way that you handle that can make a big difference in your future. It can be a negative can quickly turn into a positive.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say that, you know, there are times when, you know, either myself or one of my teammates may have inadvertently done something to upset a particular client or whatnot. And, you know, some of the times it could be just something simple. Either I was on vacation and they were expecting an email to be returned within 48 hours and, you know, I'm on vacation and for some reason or other they didn't see my announcement that I was taken off and they didn't get a response from me in 5 days and so it really disappointed them. Or recently I had somebody inside of the Insiders Club where he assumed that because he was part of the Predictable Profits Insiders Club that included unlimited amounts of coaching. Well, on one level, when you really think about it, I mean, I can't give personal one-on-one coaching to everybody inside the Insiders Club. Not only would I not have a life, I don't have enough bandwidth to be able to do that. So, but if I don't reach out to people and explain this to them and bring it back down on their level and really acknowledge them, let them feel special, acknowledge, appreciate it, because I do appreciate it. I love everybody that I work with. I live on the motto of together we're better. If I don't do whatever it takes to make it right so that they feel like it's a win-win situation here, I'm going to lose them forever. And I value my relationships with my clients and my customers too much to let that happen. It's a disservice to them and it's a disservice to me if I let somebody walk out the door without knowing, is there a way that I can make this right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first reason why somebody stops doing business with you is because they're dissatisfied. And if a customer has a bad experience with you, they're 89% more likely to switch brands. 89%, that's a statistic that was company Right Now. They're the ones who did the survey. 89% of customers said that a bad experience caused them to switch brands. And so I'm not willing. I work too hard to acquire a new client, a new customer. I'm not willing to let somebody walk out the door without making things right. And even there's been situations where, look, you're not going to please everybody. And if you think you are, then you're delusional. But there's situations where I realize, you know what? We don't see eye to eye. I don't think that I'm the right fit for you or however it is, but I want to make sure that the last experience you have with me is not going to be a negative one. So I'll do whatever we can to make sure this turns out to be a positive experience. And this is sort of the mindset that we're building in because we want to be seen as that force for good. You know, and I can go on and on and on about this, but, you know, Edelman's, they're a large PR firm. They did this study on trust, and the vast majority of consumers don't trust that a business is going to do what's right. They don't trust businesses. And so we're changing that. Trust is going to be one of the most significant competitive advantages of the next decade, but I'm going to go so far as to say trust is already starting now as being a huge competitive advantage. So you want to be able to work with a company and know and trust that they are going to treat you well. I mean, look at Nordstrom's. When you walk into Nordstrom's, you know that they are going to treat you well. They'll stand behind their product. They'll stand behind their service. Zappos, if you have any doubt whatsoever, pick up the phone. Call a Zappos employee. You know, you trust that no matter what ends up happening, Zappos is going to stand by that product. FedEx went and grew to a multi-billion dollar company because they showed early on in the beginning that they would do whatever they had to, including some of you may have heard this story about a wedding dress that didn't show up to the wedding on time, so they turned around and they hired a private plane and a pilot to take the wedding dress that happened to be shipped in the wrong location, but to fly it privately to get it to this person's wedding on time. I mean, this is part of you want to build a culture inside of your company that's based on the premise of I want my customers, I want my clients, I want my patients to know that I stand behind them. I stand behind my product. I stand behind my service. I'll do whatever it takes to help them get that greater result, the greater benefit, the greater advantage to get them the result that they desire. It's not about, see, the way that a lot of people treat business is this whole idea of all I care about is making money. It's that whole car salesman type thing. You walk into a car dealership, you know, if they don't think you're real, they're going to completely ignore you. But if they think that you're the real deal, they'll roll out the red carpet for you. They'll treat you well. But you know that you're just feels slimy. They don't care about you. They don't care what kind of result you want to get. All they care about is selling you that damn car. That's the way a lot of businesses run today. That's the reason why you see a company like Exxon. You know, Exxon doesn't have a lot of loyal fans. If there was a more viable, legitimate competitor, people would leave Exxon in a heartbeat. Because the feeling is all they care about is drilling oil and making as much money as possible. But then you look at a company like Amazon, who has a large tribe of people who are very happy to do business with Amazon. And if you talk to an Amazon employee, the Amazon culture is very much built upon the idea of let's keep everything as efficient, as effective as possible. Let's keep our costs low because the driving, every employee knows this. They don't want employees to waste anything because their objective is let's keep our costs low for our customers. Let's give them the best experience possible. You heard on the news about the drones. You know, how can we get products delivered to people the next day? And whether or not that's just a big PR stunt or they're legitimately focused on that, who knows? But at the end of the day, it's that mindset. Jeff Bezos, the founder, he's always looking at what can I do to create a greater advantage, to create a better, greater benefit. And I know they have spent money in drones. Where it goes, who knows? But then they've got their click for live chat. They're always coming up with new innovations.
Yeah.
So, again, I've gone on forever on that. So, number one is dissatisfied. Number two, life gets in the way.
Well, I think, you know, in some of those examples that you were given there about, like, an Amazon, I mean, what they're doing is taking the biggest disadvantage with their business or the biggest thing that would hinder somebody buying and solving that problem. In the case of Amazon, it's, well, I want that product, but I don't want to wait for it. And so Amazon's making it so that you won't have to wait. You'll get it fast. And, you know, I had this great, great experience. You know, you're telling a story, but yesterday with Microsoft. My wife is not around, so she can't hear this, but Santa is bringing her a Surface tablet. You know, we have an iPad, but the kids absolutely dominate that iPad, and so my wife's like, well, I'd like to try a Surface tablet. And so I get on the Microsoft website yesterday, and, of course, they have all this, you know, you can get help. You know, it's very user-friendly. But then so I go and I place the order, and, you know, thinking, man, I'm going to have to rush it here. You'll get it here before Christmas. And, you know, lo and behold, I checked out. They automatically upgraded it to next day free. So free shipping next day. I get online this morning. UPS trucks, you know, it already shows that it's in the UPS truck in Phoenix and will be here at the absolute latest by 3 o'clock today. So fewer than 24 hours later, and all this was done really without me knowing. It was just as an extra upgrade. And I was like, man, that is awesome. It cost me nothing. I'm paying less than if I went down and bought it at Staples. And, you know, the only downfall is, you know, yes, I have to wait if I buy it online, but I'm not really waiting. And it's here before Christmas, and it's all this extra stuff that was on top of, you know, the purchase that I wasn't expecting. So,
what you just said brings up another point, and there's so many points that we could share throughout this conversation. We honestly could put together content that runs 24 hours for an entire week, just discussing ideas and examples and different tips. And you know, a lot of these things are just very easy to implement. One of the things that you said, Tom, that's really important is the whole idea of delivering something unexpected. One thing of many, but one thing that I want the people who are listening to this call to take from this call is throw away the idea of your goal of having satisfied customers. Do not strive to have a satisfied customer, because a satisfied customer is not one who's going to be motivated to share their experience. They're not one who's going to be motivated to generate referrals. They're not one who will be loyal, fanatical clients, customers, or patients. You want to strive to go beyond satisfied what's a word that's even better than satisfied?
Uber satisfied.
Uber satisfied. Ecstatic. You want to have ecstatic customers. Because Tom's experience with Microsoft, where they automatically upgraded the shipping and made the experience really easy and pleasurable for him, that was something that was unexpected. That, therefore, made Tom feel the urge to share that story with us on the call, and I would be willing to bet that he's going to share that story with more than just us on the call, because anytime you have an unexpected experience, you just feel the need to tell people.
Yeah.
When I was in Cayman Islands the year before, went out to this restaurant, had a great meal at the restaurant, but we had a lot of great meals there. I mean, there's so many beautiful, wonderful restaurants and talented chefs down in Cayman. That's just a great place to kick back and fatten yourself up and enjoy life. But one of the restaurants did something different than anybody else did. It's this Italian restaurant right on the ocean. A woman comes over, and she delivers, at the end of the meal, she delivers some complimentary limoncello, just little shots of limoncello. Nothing big, just little shots. And Limoncello is like this lemon-tasting type of after-dinner liqueur. And so we drink it, and we go, wow, thank you, that was really nice of you. And she says, ah, no problem. We make this here, and I just wanted to give you as a gift and welcome you to Cayman and just say thank you. It was just really a joy to have you here. Can I get you anything for dessert? And we said, oh, you know what, we are so stuffed, but we had such a great experience here. This is just wonderful, thank you. She says, you know what, then, hold on. She comes back, and she gave just a little tasting of the desserts for all of us to share, just something little. She brought that to the table. She goes, my desserts here, they're so fantastic. It's just a sin for me to know that you're leaving this restaurant without even trying something. So I just wanted to give this to you here. Just try. Just take a little bite and enjoy it. And so, again, it was on the house. So we took the bite, and, oh, my gosh, it was phenomenal. But again, I said, all the restaurants in town, yeah, they're all great restaurants. The food's fantastic. But can you guess what the one restaurant was that we talked about the rest of the time we were there?
Well, without a doubt, the one that gives you a little taste of free dessert. Yeah.
Because she did something that was unexpected. And it was so unexpected, we told the concierge when we went back to the hotel. Then as we walked back down to the beach, as we're passing the pool, we saw a friend of ours that were sitting by the pool, and so we stopped and we told them. Then we get to the beach, we make conversation with somebody at the beach. We told them at the beach, oh, and by the way, what this woman didn't know is that my mother-in-law, who was also with us, is a travel agent, and guess what? I mean, I can only imagine the amount of business that this woman has now received as a result of my mother-in-law being a travel agent and now sharing that word. So this is what happens when you go beyond just trying to satisfy a client and you go to have an extraordinary experience. But, you know, again, so we're sidetracked.
Yeah.
Those of you who know who I am, who know me, they know that I am the ADD king of the world. So I tend to go with what excites me, I'll bring it back to the conversation. We're on the question, what are the three reasons why people stop doing business with somebody? Number one, again, they're just dissatisfied, they're not happy. Most of the time it's a complete mistake, it's inadvertent, it's not intentional, and that can be corrected. Number two, life gets in the way. A perfect example of that is I used to work with a massage therapist. I get massages all the time. Every week I'm getting a massage. Then I don't know what happened. Either a friend came in town, something like that. I stopped for 1 week, and then I just never picked up the phone to make another massage. I mean, I had massages every week for God knows how long. And then all of a sudden my pattern broke. And now I stopped getting massages, and it went on for months before I didn't have a massage anymore. And I didn't get around to it. And then my wife came home. I forget how the story went down, but there was this deal or somebody gave us a massage. I think that's what it was. Somebody gave us a massage to another massage studio. And so she gave it to me, and I went and got a massage there. Then that woman was clever enough to use that customer re-engagement strategy, and we can get into that example a little bit later. But she got me back, and I continued to get massages from that one woman. And the woman that I had seen before for, I don't know, probably years, never once reached out to say, hey, Charlie, where the heck have you been? So life gets in the way. That happens all the time, too, with dentists. I mean, you're supposed to go for a cleaning twice a year. Something happens, you cancel your appointment for your cleaning, and then you just don't think about, oh, guess what, I got to go get for another dental cleaning. It just slips your mind.
Right.
Well, you know, there's so much stuff that happens. Kid gets sick, whatever it is. But when you break the routine, things just change.
Well, let's not wait to get into that customer re-engagement strategy. I mean, let's start digging into that now. You know, so if you have... You know, I mean, obviously, with what we've talked about, people are going to realize, you know, they've got some past clients. You know, I certainly, you know, I know I've got the past ones that need more, need me to touch base with them more. But let's get into your strategy. So how do you win back the customers?
Okay. Yeah, let me answer the third point, the third reason. Life gets in the way, and then the last one is they move, die, or something prevents them from ever doing business. So if they move away, they die, whatever. So those are the three reasons. Dissatisfied, life gets in the way, and move or die or something. So the key component of the customer re-engagement strategy is being genuine. And Tom, realizing that you're a marketing expert as well, but when you look at an advertisement or you get a piece of direct mail or you get an email from a company, is the first thought in your mind, what is it that they're going to sell me?
Many times.
Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, many, many times that is.
Sure. So, and most people actually are in that mindset. They get something from a company, and the first thought is, what is it that they're trying to sell me? Now, the interesting thing about the way business operates is that in the court of law, you're innocent until proven guilty. But when you're a company and you're marketing, you're actually guilty until proven innocent. So right off the bat, people don't trust you. They don't trust your message. They don't trust that you're real. They don't trust that you're genuine. You're guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. And so, again, that goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier about the whole trust thing, that most people don't trust companies. Well, with the customer re-engagement strategy, the most important thing is to have genuine communication. It needs to be genuine, and we need, for it to work, we need our customers, clients, and patients to feel special, valued, and appreciated. Because not everybody across the board is going to get one of these customer re-engagement campaigns or letters or whatnot. It's going to our preferred customers. So it's going to people that we really want them back into the funnel. And so you define your preferred customers any way you want to define them. In some cases, it's anybody that did business with us once and has never come back. In other cases, it is somebody who's done business with us for the last 6 months but then didn't come back. It's something that whatever makes sense for you, you can test it and deploy it depending on how many customers you have and whatnot. But so the first thing we need to do, as you said, Tom, when you receive a piece of communication, the first thought in your mind is, what is it that they're trying to sell me? So number one, we need to diffuse that right away. And we need to break down that sales barrier. We want to open up the doors so that they're receptive to our message. And so the first thing we need to do is really just acknowledge the fact that we haven't seen them in a while. You know, thank them for their business and acknowledge the fact that we haven't seen them for a while. And this is the part where, you know, we really want to tie in to any sort of idea that we know one of the three ways is somebody is dissatisfied. So we want to tie into the idea of, you know, did they stop doing business with us because they aren't happy? And so we want to acknowledge that as a possibility, explain to them that if it was a possibility that they aren't happy, that chances are that it was inadvertent, or not chances are, I mean, it was absolutely inadvertent, and that we'll do whatever it takes to make it right. And so right away, when you start off with the idea of, you know, thanking somebody, acknowledging somebody, and then realizing, like, I've appreciated all your business and whatnot. You haven't been here in quite a while. Is there something that maybe I have done or somebody in my company has done that has caused you to stop doing business with us? If so, would you please reach out and call me directly, blah, blah. I promise to do whatever I can to make it right. The funny thing about that is if you did nothing wrong whatsoever, people instantly and automatically feel the urge to reach back out to you, because nobody likes to feel like they made somebody upset or they hurt somebody's feelings or that they were misunderstood. If I did something that, or if I did, if you didn't do anything that hurt me, then, or that made me upset or whatnot, I wanted to let you know. And so we've ran this campaign with clients, and we had a situation where so it's a series of three letters. The first letter goes out acknowledging, and we talk about being dissatisfied, and there's some other emotional triggers in there, which we'll get to. And then there's a second letter, which is a follow-up, and a third letter. You can be done by email or paper and ink or whatnot. So the first time we sent this out, I contacted one of my clients, and she didn't return my phone call, and the email just went out, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I need to know what's happening. Why isn't she calling me back? 48 hours go by, and she calls me back, and I said, oh, my gosh, what's going on? I haven't heard from you in a while. I need to know. How's the campaign going? She said, you wouldn't believe it. I'm exhausted. I said, oh, no, what happened? And she said, between me and my assistant, we got so many responses back of people telling us how grateful they were to receive that email, how much they appreciated me, how much they appreciated my work. We felt the need to personally respond to every single one of these people, and it just took us days. We haven't been this late. We were just flooded with people extending their appreciation back to us. Now, it turns out that this appreciation also resulted in sales. In this particular instance, she got more sales in that 1 month of running the campaign than she did all year. So 100% increase in sales just in 1 month of running this campaign. And I had another client, it's a B2B type of situation, business to business. He said the same thing. He said, Charlie, he actually did hard letters, so in the mail. He said, Charlie, it's amazing. Our phones have been ringing off the hook with our clients, our past clients, calling us back and saying how much they really appreciated receiving that letter and that everything was okay, and they explained the situation to us. See, when you do something different, we talked earlier in this call about the difference between satisfied clients and ecstatic clients. So when you do something unexpected, when's the last time you received this type of genuine communication from anybody? That doesn't happen very often. Now, I will say, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have studied lots and lots and lots of people. And this is an idea, this whole idea of customer re-engagement and the reasons why people stop doing business with you and whatnot, this is an idea that was first taught to me by Jay Abraham. And for those of you who don't know who Jay Abraham is, he's a brilliant, brilliant, extraordinary marketer. So, you know, I have to give credit where credit's due, and it's not this whole idea of re-engaging past customers is not something that I made up from thin air, and I don't know whether or not it's something that Jay made up from thin air, but he's just a brilliant guy, and it's one of those situations where you stand on the shoulders of giants. I took what I've learned from Jay, applied it in my own life and experiences, and did what I believed I needed to do to maybe give it a little bit of an edge. So
take an idea and put your own personal spin on it, or your own, so it better fits your marketing style. I mean, yeah.
Sure, absolutely, for sure.
Well, let's dig into that letter a bit. It's a letter series. I mean, you've mentioned that the letters, it's three letters that you're using as part of a customer re-engagement strategy. Whether those letters go through snail mail or their email, And you talked about with this first letter, I mean, the first time, the first letter, you're basically, you know, putting the problem on you. You know, if there was, if you're dissatisfied, hey, I'm sorry, you know, that it, you know, you're making the opportunity to solve, you know, whatever it is, whatever problem there might be. But can you go into some more, I guess, describe a little bit more what that letter might look like, what the second letter, the third letter, just give a little insight into, you know, if people are writing these letters, walk them through that process.
You really want to make it look like you're writing to one person. You want to make it as personalized as possible, that you're writing from one person. It's to one person, from one person. So if I was in the example, so I've got several different templates that I've created in the customer re-engagement formula system product, whatever you want to call it. And one of the examples that I gave is that of a dentist. And when you're doing the customer re-engagement, you're really writing from one person to another person, and you really want to break it down like you are their friend. And so instead of signing off Dr. Trush, you would sign off Tom. Because that's how you would sign off to a friend of yours.
Right.
Tom.
You want to be Dr. Trush and then, you know, letters after your name, you know, showing all your credentials, that kind of stuff. It's just...
Yeah,
your name.
Tom, and you know, you're writing the letter, you're writing to a friend, so you'd say, you know, dear Charlie, my assistant and I were talking the other day, realize it's been a while since we've seen you, just wanted to see if everything was okay, and, you know, understand life gets busy, yada, 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 but because we value your business, I just wanted to reach out to you, see, if something's happened to you, or maybe we've upset you in some way, here's my contact information, or as a token of my appreciation for all your past business, just to show you how much we care, I'd like to extend a special offer for you. It's a private offer, not available to anybody else. You give them this crazy, crazy, just delicious offer, something that makes it so much harder for them to say no than it would be to say yes. I mean, you just want them to get back into the buying cycle. So get them an offer to say yes, and then make sure that it's time, make it easy for them to order, so either direct them specific to a website or a phone number or whatnot. A private website, so something behind the door, so you don't want to say, just go to, you know, abc.com, you know, that's, and actually abc.com, I'm sure that's the news channel, but, you know, go to acmecompany.com, you know, make it seem private, and then remind them in the letter as well why they chose to do business with you in the first place. So whatever it is that's your unique advantage point, you know, remind them why your company is so much different than everybody else's. What is that big advantage, that big promise that you have to offer them? You know, is it the fact that you guarantee the appointment is going to be on time, or we'll give you an extra $50 towards your visit because they think it's important for a doctor to value your time as much as you value quality dental services? You know, that's a strong, unique advantage point. You know, why is it that people do business with you? So, you know, you want to throw that in there as well.
Okay.
So the first letter, you're reaching out, you're expressing your concern, you're giving them a reason why you're reaching out, you're acknowledging them, you're appreciating them, you're putting together a special offer, reminding them why you did business, why they chose to do business with you in the first place. The second letter, what you're doing is really, it's nothing more than the first letter, except this time you add just a little bit of a personal touch, just recognizing the fact that you haven't heard from them, and you just really wanted to make sure that they got it. And there are some tips and tricks in which way that you can make that really work for you. But what happens is, and I learned this one from Dan Kennedy, we've called it our rule of three technique, where basically you have the first letter, then you have a second letter. The second letter refers to the first letter. And then you have the third letter, and the third letter, you need to make sure you refer back to the second letter. And if you can, the second and the first. So everything always goes in the series of three. And if it's an email, the second email refers to the first email. The third email refers to the second email. So the last letter that you're sending out is sort of that final follow-up, saying, look, you know, sent you a couple letters over the last couple weeks. I even asked Vanessa to call you, whoever your assistant is, or a particular person in your office. Haven't heard back from you, but I just wanted to give you one last chance to take advantage of this special customer appreciation offer. And what I like to do is I like to include the first letter along with, so the third letter is short and sweet, it's really powerful. Then I like to include the first letter along with it just so that they can refer back to it easily and quickly. So if you think about it, Tom, so it's a series of three letters. In those three letters, it costs you, what, a penny to print it. And then you have an envelope, so maybe another couple cents there. You got a stamp, so say you're in it on the high end for a dollar per piece. That's $3 for the entire campaign if you run all three. You'll find a percentage of people are going to respond to the first letter, so you won't have to send a second. A percentage of people will respond to the second, so you won't have to send a third. And then you will get a percentage of the people that do a third. What I found is that if you only do one, you don't get nearly as much result as if you send a second and if you don't send a third. I mean, we did the last campaign we ran, we actually found that we got just as many people on the first notice that we sent as we did the third notice. We got quite a bit in the middle, but the biggest numbers were the first and the third. In fact, we got almost identical numbers from the first mailing to the third mailing. If we didn't do the third and we stopped at two, we would have missed out on a huge number of opportunities. Now, testing, testing, testing. Marketing is very much like drilling for oil. There's no magic formula. There's guidelines. There's no magic formula. What works for one person is not 100% guaranteed to work for another. We say it's drilling like oil, drilling for oil, because you're constantly testing. You're testing messages. You're testing frequency. We may end up saying that, you know what, Charlie? I know the rule of three works for you, but a rule of four for me? It only cost me an extra dollar per client, but something about that fourth letter, whoo, you know, it brought in an extra $50,000 that I wouldn't have otherwise seen. Okay, perfect. You just did something that now you've got information on what you could go with. I mean, the thing is there are people who come to me and say, I just want that concrete answers. I don't want to test. I just want to do everything. Boom, give it to me, Charlie. I said, you know what? If that was the case, companies that were doing six figures a year would automatically be doing seven figures. Seven-figure companies would be doing eight figures. You know, million-dollar companies would be billion-dollar companies. Billion-dollar companies would be trillion-dollar companies. You know, if they never could do anything wrong.
Right.
One of the largest information marketing businesses, you know who they are. Begins with an A?
Agora.
Agora is constantly testing. Testing. You think that a company who does well over $100 million has got a formula that, boom, they never have to test. But no, they're testing all the time. So, you know, what we're sharing here are guidelines. And I have a bunch of different guidelines in the program, but all I'm doing is, you know, I'm trying to set you on the right path.
Well,
give you some rules and formulas.
Well, I know, I want to touch on that again. You know, yes, the idea of testing, we know that's important because there's so many, you know, business owners, entrepreneurs, they just send something out once, and if it doesn't work, you know, they just scrap it. They don't do anything else to retest or anything. But I want to go back to that other point, and because you answered a question I was going to ask, you know, what is the magic with, you know, the three letters and why three? Because I think we have, you know, a lot of people will think, well, shoot, I just want to send it once. I don't want to send three times because then I'm going to be bothering people. But I think, you know, we have to realize that there are people that aren't going to get the letters the first time. You know, so you may have to send, you know, a second or third time just to make sure that they are going to see it. But then, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, and I think it was, you know, one of our favorites, Gary Halbert, who he talked about on some of his direct mail pieces. If he sent out the first letter and he got a nice response, he would send out to the same list the same letter. Because
yeah.
It was already working, but he knew that if it's already getting him, if he's getting a positive return on it, if he sent it again, that the chances of him getting another positive return were going to be really high. And so he would send the exact same thing to the exact same list. And I think that people who aren't in marketing, they would think that is absolutely nuts. But, you know, we see it as, you know, this is an evolving testing process. You can't just do things one time. So
it comes down to mindset too. You know, I know the results that I bring to people, and as the listeners on the call, I want you to really think about the results and the transformations and the changes, the improvements, the enhancements that you make in your customers' and clients' lives. And if you truly and honestly believe that you can make somebody's lives better. Maybe you're making them more money. Maybe you're making them healthier, prettier, sexier, whatever it might be. If you know that you can do it, you owe it not only to yourself, you owe it to them to do whatever it takes to get them to really apply your product into their life because you know you can make their life so much better. So if you don't send them that other letter, if you don't send them the other two letters, because you know that your letter is genuine, it's sincere, it makes them an offer that's going to improve their life, if you don't do it, well, shame on you. Because you're doing yourself a disservice and you're doing them a disservice. So it's mindset. I mean, I know what I can do for people. I know it. And if I don't send that extra email, if I don't send that extra letter to do whatever is possible to help change their lives, then I'm not only doing myself a disservice, I'm doing them a disservice. And you're not really, you know, it's not that salesperson that knocks on the door, you open the door, and then they stick their foot in it to prevent you from closing it so that, you know, you really have to hear what they have to say. Look, if you're really delivering genuine, valued communication, if it's by email, and if they don't like it, they can unsubscribe from your list. If it's a letter, and they don't like it, they can toss it off over their shoulder, and they can throw it in the barrel. But at the end of the day, you've got to do what you feel is absolutely necessary to get the most amount of people possible to utilize the advantages that you have to offer them.
Yeah. Well, let's, you know, we've gone a little bit past an hour, so let's go into, you know, speaking of the advantages, and we've touched on it a bit, you do have this this product that, you know, has these templates for letters that people can use as part of a customer re-engagement strategy. Basically, you know, you make it easy for them so they don't have to worry about, you know, all the technicalities behind it. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, what I've done is I've compiled my research, my experience with a customer re-engagement strategy, and I have this in I shared this in a webinar format, which has been recorded on two CDs, along with a workbook equipped with examples that have been used by other companies, tips for making your copy stand out a little bit more, including some really just cool ideas that very few people have used or thought of in the past, that again just takes your message going from something that somebody would expect, having a satisfied customer, to now going a little bit beyond that and really creating a true extraordinary experience for somebody. Everything is quite detailed inside of the program, and because the premise of what I do really is, number one, together we're better, number two, that I really have to deliver you a greater advantage, a greater benefit, to give you that ultimate result that you desire, that I stand by everything that I do. You know, if this call seems interesting to you, if you feel like you could get some sort of value from the information that we shared, by all means, give it a shot, put it to the test, see if it works for you, and if it doesn't, just call my office and we'll refund your money 100%. So I don't expect that you should have to spend a dime with me or anybody else if it doesn't make your life that much more enriched, that much better, give you that greater advantage. So that's my promise to you. It either works for you or it doesn't, and you have all the information that you were able to obtain from the course, and you get all that and your money back. So.
Well, geez, Charlie, I was expecting a real high-pressure pitch here. That was that's pretty soft on the high-pressure used car salesman pitch rating, but certainly do appreciate that. And we'll make a note here with the notes for this recording that we'll link over to the to your product. If people are just listening to this on iTunes or, you know, some recording away from the notes, the show notes, you can just go to rightwaysolutions.com/customer-reengagement. And Right Way Solutions is RightWaySolutions.com/customer-reengagement. And customer reengagement, just do it all. I know reengagement has a hyphen in there, but no hyphen in that, just customer reengagement. So anything else, Charlie, before we wrap up? Any final words of wisdom, tips, anything you want to leave listeners with?
You know, I just think that the biggest thing that we came out of with this call is really just focusing. Don't just leave keep that focus, not necessarily on always just trying to acquire new customers, but realize that acquiring new customers, once they become a customer, your job is just beginning. You want your customers to feel special, to feel valued, to feel recognized, important, and acknowledged. Let them know how much you care. And by building your business like that, you are creating that fortress. You are building a business, an empire that's got the possibility of dominating your market share. Remember we talked about it earlier on in the call. Just something as simple as a 2% increase in your customer retention has the same effect as decreasing your costs by 10%. With a customer re-engagement strategy, you could possibly see 5, 10, 15% and much more increase in customer retention. So the possibilities are quite phenomenal, and the ball is in your court.
Yeah, and I'll just toss in right at the end that, you know, this is just another one of those examples of marketing of something, you know, just go out and do it. Don't sit back and question, you know, is it going to work for me or should I really be doing this? Just go out and give it a try. I mean, Charlie's got the templates. You know, he's kind of telling you, you know, if you want to give this a try and make it really easy, he does have a product. Obviously, it's something you can also try yourself. Try writing your own letters. The idea here is just to get out there and try it. If you need help, Charlie's there.
And you tried it, right, Tom?
I tried it, yep. I sent out one letter, and I'll say, you know, my strategy with direct mail is one where I try to narrow down and focus on as small a group as possible. And so in the case of this situation, I recently did it where I just sent out one letter, it was maybe 10 or 12 people, and, you know, resulted in a project, as I said at the beginning of the call, Sharon and I talk every day, so I had to send him a note and say, hey, man, just got one of those old clients back, and a pretty significant project. I mean, I don't like to go into details about specific clients, and you know, I hate to talk money to sound hypey, especially when there's, you know, some kind of product involved. But we'll just say, you know, it's a low five-figure deal, you know, just from sending out one letter, one stamp, one envelope. And I just, it amazes me. I mean, it's just the idea. You go out there and you just do it. You just give it a try and see what happens. I mean, there's no risk. So I commend you, you know, Charlie, for even bringing this to my attention, because like I said at the beginning, you know, a year and a half ago when you started working on this, you know, I just thought it was a brilliant idea, and, you know, I think it's even more brilliant because I implemented part of it and saw some nice results. So, that's my parting shot, to just go out there, give this a try, and, you know, I think you might be surprised. It's something that's so simple but can deliver such incredible results. So, Charlie, I thank you for spending time. It looks like we're at 71 minutes of your time sharing your insights, sharing your strategies. And for everybody else, you know, I thank you for listening in. And again, the link to go check out Charlie's stuff, if you want to go see it, just go to rightwaysolutions.com/customer-reengagement. So, Charlie, thanks a lot, and, of course, I'm sure we're going to do this again soon. We did a great job staying underneath that two-hour window, but, you know, we're creeping close to it. So, thanks a lot. I appreciate it for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
All right.